You're listening to Showtime
on URN.
Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Ella Madrinska. I'm joined by my partner in radio crime, PR Abby. It's weird having you back in person, Abby. We're so used to seeing you just exclusively on Twitter, and now you're here in person. We can hear your lovely dulcet tones. Hello.
I'm an actual real person, which I think some newer Showtime listeners and Spotlight On listeners may have started to worry that I was not a real person.
And you do have opinions on the Tony Awards, which is what we are here to talk about. If you listen to the live show on Sunday, the 26th of September, it was our annual Tony special where we run through all of the nominations, the musical nominations, I should say. There are plays. You'll be able to follow the link here in the post to find out all of the nominees and the winners, but we are only looking at the musicals for the most part here. Showtime is a musical show, so that's what we're focusing on. We ran through all the nominations on Sunday. We played a load of the songs from the shows that were nominated. And then following that, it was the real life Tony Awards in New York at the Winter Garden Theatre. Slightly different ceremony this year. Normally it's all sort of one big long event. They actually split it up into two shows this year. The first part of which was on a subscription service that you had to pay for. And they ran through like basically every award that wasn't best musical, best play and best revival of a play. What do you think about that, Abby, the splitting it up that way?
I think it made sense for this year, because if you're going to trial it in any year, you may as well trial it this year when people have kind of got used to watching things as well on streaming services and things. But as we've kind of mentioned, a lot of people, like, their introduction to musical theatre and their, like, love of it, and love of course, regular theatre, their introduction to it, especially in America, is through the Tony Awards, is through seeing all the performances, all of the glitz and glamour, seeing people going up and, like, you know, accepting awards and talking about, like, stuff like costume design and lighting design and all of the behind-the-scenes stuff that you might not necessarily consider. So I do think they, the people behind the broadcast at the Tony Awards, need to consider whether or not it gets the same reach.
Yeah, as the show. No, I agree wholeheartedly, because what was interesting is that they put best musical, best play and best revival of a play in a second show that started about an hour and a half after the actual broadcast had begun. That was on like a national television channel in America, free to watch. It was hosted by Leslie Odom Jr. from Hamilton. It had the big classic musical theatre opening number, which you can watch by the link here in the post if you want to see that. It had all the performances from the nominated best musicals. Again, they're here in the post. You can watch them. Like, that was very much the sort of the what we expect from the Tony Awards. And it was pitched as this show that was called Broadway's Back. And in some ways I can be like, yeah, if you're just a sort of a lay person who's kind of a bit interested in theatre and is wanting to know what they should go and see next time they're in New York, then the bit you're interested in are best musical, best play revival, and the nominated musical performances. You're less interested in best costume design, best lighting. But I also don't want, for theatre fans and, you know, people like ourselves, I don't want it to make it seem like one award is less important than the other. I understand that the best musical stuff is more commercial than the technical awards, but the technical awards are great. And if you're there as a theatre fan, suddenly not being able to watch this because they put it on a subscription service at a time when we're trying to make theatre as accessible as possible, and they're like, the only way to watch this is to pay extra, it just seems like a bit of a bad idea. So there were difficulties in the actual technical broadcast because of the way television works in America. There were certain places in the country that didn't get the Broadway's Back live show as it was broadcasting because a football match had gone on too much, and they decided to play Big Brother instead. And they're like, you'll get the show in an hour, which that was a bad decision. So I feel like there were elements of a good idea. A lot of it was poorly executed. It needs work, but could work in the future.
And it was a subscription service that I don't think a lot of people, it's not one of the big mainstream subscription services. So it's not like an Amazon Prime or a Netflix or even like an Apple TV, where at least some people are already subscribed for other content. People were having to subscribe literally to watch the Tony Awards, which I can understand commercially why that makes sense. But I don't think it's the correct move. Yeah. I think it's going to alienate more people than it brings in.
It all just felt a little bit weird. And in a year where the Tony Awards were already quite strange, like, I saw someone...
The fact that it finally happened, to be honest, some of us were like, maybe they're just going to, like, pretend. And they're like, yeah, no, we did it ages ago. Yeah,
this is the thing. I saw a critic describe this particular season at the Tonys as the longest and most unsatisfying Tony season. And I know what he means. Like, it has gone on so incredibly long. Like, even though these awards were held September 2021, they are for the 2019 to 2020 theatre season. So we had shows nominated that opened like nearly 2 years ago. So it felt a bit drawn out in that regard. But also, there's just the relief that it happened, that we're finally here. Because
we did it, guys.
Moulin Rouge, which was nominated for a lot of things and did very well, we'll get on to that. That opened like November 2019. Obviously, closed when Broadway shut down in March 2020. The nominations for the Tony Awards came out in October 2020, and it's taken until September 21 for them to get anything. And you know, that's ridiculous. That's such a drawn out process, and I understand why it happens. But then to have an actual show that was good, really captured the vibe of theatre and really brought live musical theatre back to people, great. But to have it kind of embedded in all these technical difficulties, and have you got the right subscription service to watch the first part? Are you only going to watch the free broadcast where it's all like shiny and spectacular? It all felt a little bit weird.
It oddly fits the year that has followed. I feel like if it had to go wrong, fine.
Yeah.
And hopefully by next year, we'll be back on track, everybody.
Touch wood. See what happens.
Fingers crossed. But yeah, we will get to that.
But yeah, speaking of getting to things, obviously we both are incredibly invested in the Tony Awards. We'd run through all of the nominations on Showtime last Sunday, but we are here now to run through the winners and to share our thoughts on them. So I will start by saying there were only three musicals nominated. In a normal Tony Awards year, you'd be looking at sort of 9 or 10 plus. There'd be some revivals in there. There'd be some, you know, entirely new original shows. The three shows that were nominated, that were eligible to be nominated and then got anything, were Tina, the Tina Turner musical, which follows the story of Tina Turner's life through her music. There's Jagged Little Pill, based on the album by Alanis Morissette. And then there's Moulin Rouge, which I feel like we can say now, we're totally biased in favour of Moulin Rouge. And I think we've been proved right. They did great at the awards. So, again, they're the three shows that were nominated. We will run through what they actually won, maybe what we thought. Awards that should have gone to somebody else, potentially. But remember that the videos for all of their performances are linked below, so you can have a little look, get a taste of them for yourself. And on that note, we'll start with Tina, the Tina Turner musical. It was up for the fewest awards compared to the others. I say that, it was up for 12 awards compared to 14 and 15 respectively. Like, everything was doing pretty well.
Which in any other year,
yeah,
you'd be celebrating, you'd be running up and down Broadway.
Yeah, as you'll see, there are quite a few awards that it was just like, oh, lighting design, we'll just nominate all three of them, in a way that wouldn't normally happen in a usual year. There'd be a bit more variety, and we will come to that. So Tina, the Tina Turner musical, up for 12 awards. You can see all 12 that it was nominated for in the link in the post. It only won one, and that was Best Leading Actress for Adrienne Warren, who plays the title character of Tina Turner. Incredibly well-deserved, right?
Amazing. Yes, absolutely. I mean, please go watch her performance. because
she deserved the Tony just for the performance she did at the Tony Awards. Like, let alone the fact that she's been doing this role for years. Like, she deserved that award more than anyone I think I've ever witnessed.
If they were only going to win one award, they won the correct one.
Absolutely.
Like, if we had to pick one. She's just, so her voice is amazing. But it also, when you are performing as someone as iconic as Tina Turner, you have to get the voice right. And she's just got it down so, so much. I think, well, didn't she say in her like acceptance speech that she's been persuaded to do the show 3 times now or something like that in 3, and she was like, I'm done, like, I've really enjoyed it, I've had a lot of fun, but
it's exhausting because she has to get into shape for it each time. She really has to train for it, and when you watch her, even though logically I know that she's Adrienne Warren, star of Broadway, I'm watching Tina Turner. It sounds like Tina Turner. She dances, she moves like Tina Turner. And then it's sort of weird seeing her face, Adrienne Warren's face on it. But you say
she's talking just normally, and you're like, oh, no, you're just a person who's just, you know, have a family, have like a life outside.
Yeah, I mean, she is incredible. And she originated the role actually in London in the West End when Tina opened here first. And she didn't get the Olivier Award for leading actress, the Olivier's being sort of the West End equivalent of the Tonys, which I think was the right call at that point, because Sharon D. Clarke was in Caroline or Change, and Sharon D. Clarke just an absolute legend. But there was no one else on the list at the Tony Awards this year that I was like, as a performer, could in any way be more deserving than Adrienne Warren. She was up against Elizabeth Stanley from Jagged Little Pill and Karen Olivo from Moulin Rouge. So I think it says a lot that I'm so adamant that Adrienne Warren should win this, because I bloody love Moulin Rouge and Karen Olivo is great, but
she's amazing.
Adrienne Warren's just a league of their own.
And she carries the show. Like, if you watch the performance, and I think if you go see the musical, because it's about her, Tina Turner's life.
Yeah,
clearly she's in it a lot. Like, she's really the powerhouse behind it. So if you're going for like lead actress, she like, in every sense of the word, she was lead actress. So
absolutely, know. Yeah,
we're very happy. I think Ella would have like gotten the first plane out of here.
I would have rioted, absolutely. Because also, and this is sort of just a wider Tony issue. We'll come on to this more later. But in terms of diversity in nominations across the board, both plays and musicals, a lot of, you know, diverse people being represented. Great to see. The winners less so. And it was reaching a point by the time they got to Best Leading Actress in a Musical on the evening that people were genuinely becoming concerned that Adrienne Warren wouldn't win because she isn't white, and it had been a very whitewashed winning sort of series across the board, and I understand that fear. I was beginning to feel it as well, and the relief, which we shouldn't have, the relief when she won, because she so clearly should have won, that relief shouldn't have been there, that worry shouldn't have even had to cross our minds. And we will get to that later when we talk a little bit about diversifying voters as much as the nominations committee. But Tina, I feel like in another year they still would have got that award, and I don't know if they'd got anything else. So I don't feel, as much as it would have been nice to see them pick up a few more awards, particularly in terms of the, like, it is by far the most diverse sort of creative team compared to the other musicals, it would have been nice to see them get more. I didn't really expect them to, but they got the leading actress one for Adrienne Warren, which they more than deserve in abundance. Yeah. But yeah, definitely take a look at the video of her performing. Adrienne Warren genuinely blew me out the water. As I say, I watched just that Tony performance and was like, she deserves the Tony for this. She's great. Very, very happy for her. We then move on to the most controversial musical of this year's awards, Jagged Little Pill, based on the album by Alanis Morissette. It was leading the nominations going into the awards. It was up for 15 different things. It won 2, and it's sort of the 2 that are most controversial out of everything it was nominated for. So it won Best Featured Actress for Lauren Patton. Now, Lauren Patton is a cisgender woman, meaning that she identifies as the same gender that she was assigned at birth, who, when she joined the show initially, was playing a non-binary character whose pronouns in the show were they, them, and there were a lot of references to the fact that Joe was a non-binary person. When the show moved to Broadway, it was assumed that the character would be played by someone who was non-binary. Instead, Lauren Patton stayed with the show and the character of Joe was changed to a cisgender woman. So the pronouns became she, her. They removed any references or lines in the show that made comment about Joe being non-binary, and the entire creative team on social media and Lauren Patton herself as an actress doubled down on the fact that Joe had never been anything other than cisgender and basically gaslit fans for an entire year saying, no, you made this up. They released a statement just last week going, yeah, no, sorry, we were wrong. We basically lied about this. We handled it badly. We'll be taking steps in the future to address this, which we will see what comes of that. So we went into the awards with a lot of controversy about Lauren Patton specifically and the character that she plays. She won Best Featured Actress. Now, of the people who were nominated in that category, you had Myra Lucretia Taylor from Tina the Tina Turner musical. You had Robin Herder, who plays Nene in Moulin Rouge. There was Celia Rose Gooding and Catherine Gallagher, who were both also in Jagged Little Pill. And then obviously Lauren Patton from Jagged Little Pill, who won. I think of those five performers, controversy aside, Lauren Patton does technically give the best performance of the character which she is playing. She has become known for having like the show-stopping standout moment in Jagged Little Pill. It is possibly the correct win. On a technical level, I just don't think it should have got to a point where it was allowed to happen, personally. It feels a little bit like they're rewarding a bad thing. And it's frustrating that it was allowed to get there, I think is where I'm going with this.
Yeah, because voting closed in March of this year. So the statement that came out, because I know that a lot of people were wondering, are they doing that in order to like influence anything? It wouldn't have necessarily, at that point, it wouldn't have necessarily mattered. Yes. And then there has been further discussion and controversy caused by her acceptance speech, in which she thanks trans and non-binary, she says people and friends and things like that for having a discussion with her about
difficult conversations. She thanks them for having difficult conversations. And now this is interesting because I don't think she should have won this award personally. I think someone should have stepped in and said, you know, that there is a lot of hurt that's been caused by this show and the handling of it, and steps should have been taken to address this. However, I accept that on a technical level, she deserves this award. And as a performer, like it's a really difficult thing. We went in expecting her to win this. I knew that she was going to have to address the controversy when she inevitably gave a speech. I personally wish she'd been more sort of apologetic and deferent about it, rather than expressing gratitude for people being hurt. I know that's a weird way of phrasing it, because obviously she's not thankful that people have been hurt, but it sounds like, you know, thanking the trans and non-binary community for having difficult conversations does not,
she's not
give any agency to the fact that she has caused a lot of this pain.
Yeah, it's the lack of responsibility taken. It's these people having conversations, like, and not even dressing with me, like it's, and there's questions of whether or not she should have accepted the award or whether or not she should have gone, thank you, I am grateful for this, but I can't accept it because of these reasons. And it's good that she said something. I just don't think it was the correct thing to say,
because there's also,
because at least you
addressed
that there was an issue. But it just we've discussed this previously, you discussed it on the show, that it's not a situation that ever should have happened in the first place.
And I think one of the difficulties with Jagged Little Pill, and we'll come on to this with the other award that they won, Jagged Little Pill try so hard to address a lot of difficult topics, and it's really sort of being pitched as a liberal, progressive, woke story, if you want to call it that. You know, there are characters who are struggling with their sexuality, who, you know, are trying to come to terms with their own identity. And it's a positive thing that we have shows that are doing things like that. It just seems like it's almost gone too far, and that's made even more of a mockery of the things that they've got wrong, because you can see that they're trying to be woke, to be liberal, while at the same time causing so much damage and pain to the people that they seem to be aiming to represent.
And then even, because you can see in the signage as well, if you go watch the performance, like all the signs are about Black Lives Matter, and there are references to trans people and like LGBTQ plus rights. So all of that, but then to have made a mistake, and people, you know, sometimes mistakes are made.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Fine. That's part of progress. But then to not address that and not go, we did make a mistake, actually. Thank you for letting us know.
It's not even addressing it. It's actively
gaslighting an entire community.
Yeah, going, you have made this up. Because there were lines that were coming out from the creative team. There were lines saying... We're pleased that you seem to see yourself represented in the character of Joe. And you go, no, you wrote Joe as non-binary. You represented this community. And then you've taken it away and are now actively lying about it.
Yeah.
Which brings me on to the other award that Jagged Little Pill won, which was Best Book of a Musical. So that's the script written by Diablo Cody. And again, like, you could not have picked a more controversial one to award with this.
Who didn't mention anything in the acceptance speech. And yeah, of the two awards that it could have won, they are the two that I think a lot of people were concerned and worried that they would win. But weirdly, if this situation hadn't happened, as it shouldn't have, then so many people would have been so excited that it had they had won those two awards.
This is the thing, because like, I do think Lauren Patton gives the best performance of all the featured actress nominees. I do think that the script, in a lot of ways, I mean, I haven't seen the show, so I can't fully comment, but it tackles a lot of difficult subjects, and it does it with a level of sensitivity that is difficult to achieve on stage. You know, the story is well told. It's just the two categories that were most caught up in all of this controversy are the ones that have been rewarded. And again, I just worry that it feels like it's playing into the, coming back to the sort of the diversity of the voting crowd. Realistically, a lot of those voters are not going to be people who have been affected by this show or the conversations that were happening around it. And I worry that there's this element of, they've done difficult topics, we'll give them a vote for best script, in a way that it shouldn't have, given the context of the show, I think is what I have to say on it. I didn't expect Jagged Little Pill to win much else. As you will see, as you said on Sunday, but as we'll see as this podcast goes on, all the technical awards, the design stuff, they were always going to go to Moulin Rouge. It wasn't going to get Best Actress because Adrienne Warren's there. The acting categories were probably where it was the featured actor and actresses were probably where it was likely to pick things up, as it has done. I did wonder maybe whether Best Orchestrations would be in with a shout. I wanted Moulin Rouge to win, and we'll come on to that, but Tom Kitt, who did the orchestrations for Jagged Little Pill, has done a really good job of taking these pop and rock songs and making them sound like musical theatre numbers. So my hat off to him. It just wasn't quite as extreme as what Moulin Rouge have achieved. But again, Tom Kitt, Best Orchestrations, would have been a significantly less controversial award to go. It's like, oh, well done, you've put some trumpets in here. You haven't gaslit the trans community. Well done. Yeah. So
bare minimum
at this point. It's frustrating and it's difficult, and it's also been heightened by the fact there are only three shows available. If there had been 9 or 10 shows that could have been eligible for these categories, chances are, even if it did get nominated, it might not have won.
Yeah.
And then as awful as it sounds, say a lot of this controversy on like a main stage platform might have just bubbled away, and it would be on places like social media and the further conversations happening that would have kept it alive. At the moment, they've gone, which are the two most controversial ones? Give them the Tonys. And the whole thing is just a bit iffy.
I have a genuine question. Do mm-hmm. you think, in the similar way that we were talking, Lauren Patton, technically it is the best performance, do you think that on a certain level they went, technically, as the crew behind the scenes are saying, this is technically the best book? Is there an element of that, do you think?
I do think so. It was only up against Moulin Rouge and Tina, the Tina Turner musical. Having not seen any of these, you know, it's weird going into the Tonys, because you can listen to the music, you can see clips, you can get a sense of the show. So it's sort of easier to call best musical, whereas the script is something you only really experience if you watch it. I do think that even if it's not like the best script, Jagged Little Pill has the most traditionally theatre script, and that really suits Tony audiences. I do think what it aimed to achieve, it is still there enough that it will resonate with people, it will have that emotional punch in a way that Moulin Rouge is very much, flashy, dancers, sparkle.
It doesn't have the nuance
of script, and Tina, I don't think has the story to win best script.
And yeah, I guess people maybe know about Tina Turner's story already, so it's not like a surprise or there's any elements that you.
So again, technically, I think, because I remember messaging you when I saw that it had won Abby, and I was sort of like I was counting down, being like one for one, two for two, three for. I've been calling all of this, and it got to best book, and I was like, I'd sort of forgotten this was a category. Yeah. I hadn't given it any thought, and then when they announced Jagged Little Pill, I was like, well, obviously it was going to win because the other two weren't, if that makes sense. So I guess that does
process
mean,
of elimination.
Yeah. Kind of thing, I guess that technically that means I did think it was the best script. I just, again, it's that thing of, it would have been really nice to have the, you know, Diablo Cody, who won, acknowledge it. And as you said earlier, maybe think less of themselves and more make a statement about, thank you for acknowledging the show. We realize that we have done wrong. We realize we have things to work on. Thank you for the acknowledgement, but this is not the time for me to be like, boastful.
Especially as they like announced we would be like looking at things, and we'll, you know, they've made a statement.
Because there's also intent. The fact we will move on to the joy of Moulin Rouge in a moment. Bear with
us. This is where the Moulin Rouge is just going to be us going, like screaming,
greatly.
So you know, this is, you know, actual discussion.
I do think it's something that's important to address, because I worry that people often think, musical theatre, happy, jolly, fine.
And actually,
there's so much going on behind the scenes. Like, a lot of shows aren't happy and jolly and fine. They're really sad. It's a very emotional thing. But behind the scenes, there's so much politics, so much in this industry that needs to change. And we do tend to look at the performers who are often very progressive. You know, musical theatre goes so hand in hand with the LGBTQ+ community that I think often it's easy to forget that a lot of the producers, a lot of the creative teams, particularly those who are really established, or dare I say it, old white men, Cameron McIntosh, like it's easy to forget that there are people who are actively not trying to help the industry, even as the performers themselves are so progressive. You know, I mentioned Cameron McIntosh there very slyly, but he made a statement earlier this year saying that he thinks that casting trans people in lead roles is a gimmick. And, you know, how dare he? If you cast a trans woman to play Mary Poppins, you are casting her because she is a woman and she is an actress. You're not casting them to be like, make Mary Poppins trans. The whole thing is very difficult, and I feel like we're fighting this constant uphill battle where on a superficial level, people will look at musical theatre or theatre in general and go, there are LGBTQ+ people performing here. Yeah. There's a mix of ethnicities and races. theatre is doing well, and actually there's so much behind the scenes that isn't there yet, that is being actively unprogressive. And award ceremonies like this, where things are so political often in terms of what gets nominated, in terms of what gets voted for, in terms of what wins, something like Jagged Little Pill winning these two awards in particular speaks volumes. And so it's important to address it and to put it out there and to engage in these conversations rather than brushing it under the rug.
Yeah, definitely. And because, you know, we do have a platform, we are a musical theatre show, we talk about musical theatre, and it, you know, it's in these issues are issues that are across the creative industries, basically. And it'll be interesting, hopefully, seeing how we talked a little bit about this, but I think we both decided that we're not here. We're not the people who should be coming up with solutions again. It's an obvious thing here, guys.
As far as we're aware, the Tony, I mean, I don't know if I've got a missed call while I've been recording this. As far as I'm aware, the Tonys haven't been in touch with us to ask how we can revolutionise their voting system.
Yeah.
But, you know, if more people are vocal about things needing to change, then eventually someone will listen.
Yeah. And it'll be, I hope that the whole awards ceremony, as well as the theatre community, like, actually talk to the people affected by these issues and work with them to make, like, especially the awards, which are a whole celebration of theatre, to make them more inclusive and more diverse, and to, like, represent the people who watch and, you know, love theatre, because that's what we all are at the end of the day. You know,
these are important conversations to have. However, we will draw a temporary veil over that, and we will move on to the final musical that was nominated, a particular Showtime favourite. And the reason we've saved it to last is not because we were both biased in favour of it, but also because it bloody won everything. That is Moulin Rouge, the large-scale, extravagant spectacle that is Moulin Rouge, based on the Baz Luhrmann film of the same name. It went into the awards nominated for 14 different awards. It won 10 of them.
Yep.
Now, I will start by saying, I don't think it would have done this well in a different year. If there was more competition, I think Moulin Rouge would have done well. I don't know if it would have done this well. That being said, I'm really pleased that it has done, because it's exactly what we need right now. It's so fun. Yeah. It's so frivolous. If you watch the Tony performance, which again, linked here in the post, I personally think it's the only one that you watch going, well, this is clearly a best musical. It's so over the top. You can't help but be engulfed in the world that they have created. And it's got the magical and the spectacle of theatre. And I love it.
Yeah. Not to be sort of like a magpie, but it's so shiny and glittery and lovely. And it does draw you in. You kind of go, well, go on then. What's the next bit? You want to see more of it. I mean, there's a confetti cane, for God's sake. I mean, like, what more do you want? And the costumes are beautiful. Like, it's really eye-catching, I think.
Absolutely.
In the, like, the biggest sense of that word.
So it will come as no surprise that Moulin Rouge did win Best Musical. That's the big award. It's the one that
If you were waiting all through this podcast.
Moulin, you can leave now. It got Best Musical. We can all relax. You know, that is sort of the important one. There aren't many people, I feel like, maybe I would do this, but there's not really that many people who are going, oh, we're going to New York on holiday, let's go and see a show, what should we go and see? Ah, yes, the best scenic design. They're gonna go, what won Best Musical, what had the best actors in it, we'll go and see that. Moulin Rouge is that to a T, and I think it's the right sort of show for that as well, because even if you're not a huge fan of musical theatre, it will draw you in, it will win you over, it's a spectacle. You can go in and you can go, oh wow, look how pretty everything is in terms of the technical ability, but also, oh wow, look how pretty it is. It's all red and sparkly and shiny. Ah, great. It appeals to everybody, is where that sentence is going.
Yeah. And all of the songs as well are very appealing to, I think, everybody. So like, I can think of only very few people who wouldn't want to listen to at least like some of the songs? Yeah.
So speaking of songs, I mentioned Best Orchestrations earlier. That's the award for basically making the song sound like they should be in a stage show, giving them the particular arrangements and the way that the band plays them, for want of a better word. Moulin Rouge has like 70 plus songs in it. It's a jukebox musical, which means they're all original pop songs. So you've got like Katy Perry and A-ha and Gloria Estefan and just like Elton John, a real mad collection of songs. And I will die on this hill because every single song that features in Moulin Rouge sounds like it has been written specifically for that stage show. And I think Justin Levine and his team of people more than deserve that award. In any other year, I would still want them to have won that because it is so well done.
The sheer scale of the work as well. Like, I think, you know, because when you look at other jukebox musicals as well, there will sometimes be like mashups of songs and things, and, you know, occasionally, but also a lot of the songs do kind of remain lyric wise as they were, and they have the feel of it. This takes songs, it's like, oh, I'm going to take that bit of that and that bit of that, and we're going to throw that line in there. It's just, I cannot imagine given that task and then executing it as well as they've done, because as you say, none of it sounds out of place, none of it you go, oh, that was a bit of a weird,
like, if you've seen the film version of Moulin Rouge, you'll know the Elephant Love medley scene, which has Hugh McGregor and Nicole Kidman just singing like a load of love songs. It's called the Elephant Love medley because it's a medley of love songs sung in an elephant. It's nothing to do with elephant love. I don't know how anyone could take that number and go, do you know what this needs? More songs. And it works so well. And so you're getting a line here and there, and you're getting like little instrumentals that then aren't being sung, and it blends so perfectly. And I say, it sounds like it's been written as a like one piece for the show. It's so, so well done. I'm so, so pleased for them.
Also, they had to differentiate themselves from the film version, which is much beloved.
And there were also, there were songs that they weren't allowed to use from the film version. Yeah. Like they didn't get rights for Queen's The Show which Must Go On, because
a whole complicated thing that we don't ever talk about, but actually music rights are a nightmare to navigate.
The reason, supposedly the reason they didn't get that is because the stage show of Moulin Rouge was premiering around the time that Bohemian Rhapsody came out. Yeah. And so they were like, you can't have this song. We're putting it in this film. Like,
already licensed.
And
it.
So
yeah, it's its own thing. Yeah. It's running its own train.
Absolutely. So one best musical, when best orchestrations. It did get every single one of the design awards. So there's best scenic design, best costume design, best lighting design, and best sound design. Every critic expected Moulin Rouge to get all of those. As we've said, it throws everything in the kitchen sink at it, even if in other years there might have been something that was more technically proficient or effective. Moulin Rouge has the spectacle that just wins you over. And I absolutely think it deserves every single one of those awards compared to Tina and Jagged Little Pill. And while it's odd to have a show having an absolute clean sweep, I will say it also happened in the plays category. Christmas Carol won all of the design awards there. And I don't think in Tony history we've had a design categories ever dominated so much by just two individual shows.
That's really interesting. Mm. Yeah, I think we discussed it in our Moulin Rouge West End cast announcement podcast.
Oh yes, I'll put a link to that as well. You can
go listen to, but we mentioned that, like, we sort of talked about the different kind of trends that happen across musical theatre, and to have some shows we've seen kind of recently, a lot of like minimalist shows, really, you know, paring it down to the actors and their voices. Moulin Rouge is not that show, so if you want it,
opposite,
and maybe avoid. but we're talking about, you know, especially after this year, like the grandeur and the difference, and, you know, the showing difficulty in a different way. So this is technically difficult because there is just so much going on, and you're having to keep everyone's like costumes correct and all of that kind of stuff, whereas minimalist has its own issues and difficulties, which is why they sometimes win those technical categories. But I think anyone is mad about.
No, absolutely not.
Categories.
No, I think
once again, confetti cane. Just gonna put that back out there.
You're obsessed with this confetti. See, because I remember you saying you were disappointed that Moulin Rouge didn't have a revolving stage. I think they make up for it with the confetti. Coming out of all sorts of places.
I think even I have to admit, it doesn't need a revolving stage. Like, do not throw any more at it. Because, oh God, it would just...
It would be very busy.
Very busy.
And
very liable to even more technical mishaps.
So the person we have to thank for a lot of that is Alex Timbers, the director who did win Best Direction of a Musical. I wasn't entirely sure which way this would go. I would have put my money on Alex Timbers, particularly because we were expecting Moulin Rouge to sweep the design categories, which it did. But wasn't absolutely convinced. I'm really pleased that he won. He seems to be like the nicest man ever. No one has a bad word against him. In his speech, he also dedicated the award to the composer Michael Friedman, who died a few years ago, but they worked together on shows like Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. And it sort of... It was one of those moments where you see someone's hard work over the years pay off just as much as like this individual show. So very, very happy for Alex Timbers. And then his partner in crime, Sonia Taya, who won for Best Choreography, which again, as we said in the Moulin Rouge podcast, I'm obsessed with the choreography, specifically one moment where a cast member does the splits, and I want to go and see Moulin Rouge when it comes to the West End just for that moment, regardless of the rest of the show, which is going to be great, just specifically that moment. So again, Sonia won Best Choreography, and more than deserved.
Yeah, there's so many cast as well to choreograph, which I think, I don't know whether or not we've seen something on that scale recently of just having that many people on a stage. So I can't, massively.
Well, because it's not even just that many people on the stage, because I'm just thinking, you know,
it's them all doing different stuff.
Yes. So the Prince of Egypt, if you see that in the West End, that's got a really big cast compared to most shows. Yeah. And I will say, choreography and staging, incredible. But a lot of the time, it's theatrical movement rather than dance. Right. It's because the ensemble there are used as an ensemble. They at one point are like that they're playing slaves in the opening number, but then they turn into the river, and then they're like trees, and then at one point they're a wall, and then they act out a flashback. Yeah. And so it's that kind of choreography and staging. Whereas Moulin Rouge, you're set in a performance space. So all of the ensemble are dancers in the performance space. So whenever they're moving, it's dance. And you obviously have a lot of big dancing numbers, like Roxanne is the famous one. You've got the Argentine tango that's in the film. It is full-on choreography. And I really like Sonia Taya's danceability and the different styles that get brought in as well. It really is very impressive to watch. And again, said this in the Moulin Rouge podcast if you want to listen to that, but the West End show that will premiere in November, the entire design and technical team from the Broadway show are coming with the show to get it set up. So if you go and see Moulin Rouge in the West End when it opens, you will be seeing Tony Award choreography, Tony Award direction, Tony Award costume design, Tony Award best scenic design. It's going to be incredible. I'm so excited.
As we've already expressed.
Yes.
We can't contain ourselves.
No. So then that's 8 of the 10 awards that Moulin Rouge won. The last two were in the acting categories. So Best Featured Actor, I think was one of the more open categories this year. You had Daniel J. Watts from Tina, the Tina Turner musical, who... before I carry on with this list, I will say, did his own performance at the Broadway's back section of the Tony Awards. It's this like tap dancing spoken word poem. It's one of the best things I've ever seen. I will put that in the link below. He was nominated. Son and Gouger plays Toulouse-Lautrec in Moulin Rouge. He was nominated. You had Sean, Alan Krill and Derek Klenner, both for Jagged Little Pill. And then you had the winner, Danny Burstein, who plays Harold Ziedler, the owner of the Moulin Rouge. And while in terms of actual performance ability, I think this was the most open category, Danny Burstein had to win this.
Yeah.
This was his seventh Tony nomination, having never won one before, even though he's one of the most established actors in the business. He's also had the most awful year. He got COVID and ended up being hospitalized, managed to get through it eventually, and then sadly lost his wife to ALS a few months later. Like, he has had by far one of the most challenging years out of everyone. And I, you know, as I said on Sunday, the Tony Awards isn't something that is decided by like sob story.
No.
But to give like our little bit back to reward and to help this man who is so lovely, so genuine, so kind, and so deserving in so many ways. It made me cry when he won, even though I was expecting it.
And his acceptance speech will definitely make you cry.
I'll definitely link that below. It's so lovely.
So humble about it, but also you can clearly see that it means a lot to him. And I feel like "Hello, chickens" from the Moulin Rouge is one of my favorite lines, just because you just feel like it's starting, we're here, like it's I think it's very well deserved. And I did cry a little bit just because I was very happy about him winning.
It was so lovely. And then teared up for a slightly different reason when the best leading actor in a musical category was announced. Now, Aaron Tveit, Broadway legend, Showtime favourite, one of the original hashtag love him owners, if we're going back that many years to the start of Showtime. We love him. He's an incredibly deserving actor. He plays Christian in Moulin Rouge, which is the Ewan McGregor character. He was the only actor nominated for Best Leading Actor in a Musical,
which in the run-up to the announcement of the award was very much like the point was made.
Yes. The people presenting the award, they did have to legally address the fact that he needed 60% of the votes to win. So he wasn't guaranteed.
It was his face. Sorry, Ella, I keep interrupting you, but his face when they said that, like he knew it. They all knew it in the theatre. And his face just went, "Oh, please let some have voted for me."
I don't know if anyone else was as nervous as he was going into this, because you know it was pretty much a shoo-in that he was going to win. We know that. He presumably knows that. Not only was he, you know, he was the only person nominated, he didn't have any competition, but also we've been claiming since 2009 that he should have been nominated and won for Next Normal. This was actually his first ever Tony nomination for Moulin Rouge, which is ridiculous. He was going to win it. And even if there'd been other performers nominated, other than maybe if they'd put Daniel J. Watts in Best Leading Actor rather than Best Featured, even then, I think Aaron Tveit would have won this, because it's the Danny Burstein effect, where it's like you're kind of rewarding everything that they've done up to this point as much as this individual show. However, I'm so relieved that he did win. Because can you imagine how awkward that would have been?
It is both very funny to imagine and horrifying to imagine if they'd gone, because then also, once you're presenting the award, what do you do at that point? Do you just leave the stage? Do you run? I would run.
Okay, so here's a question. They would have walked out holding a Tony Award.
They take it back.
Yeah, because like,
oh my God.
You have to hand it to the person.
Yeah. It has to be on stage.
If they knew that no one had won, would they have even bothered to give them a Tony? Or would they, like, presumably you need the prop.
Yeah, I think they would have sent them out with one.
Yeah. because the ones that you get given are instantly taken away from you, and they're then sent off to be engraved with your name on it.
So if you ever win a Tony, any listeners, don't panic if they take it back. It's fine. You still have it.
But yeah, Aaron Tveit, much deserved winner for best leading actor. And also, again, I'll put his speech below. You can tell how much it means to him. Like, yeah. Even though I will say, as far as I'm aware, he was the only person who came with a written speech, which, you know.
Also, people took it out of his pocket.
If you're the only person nominated,
you might as well jot down some notes. He was really, also, he must have been so nervous. So then, like, that relief, clearly his mind must have just gone blank. Like, I think we've all experienced that moment of being like, I have no idea what to say right now.
You can also, you can really see, he's okay for, but you can see that you can see the emotion and he's okay. And then he begins to fall apart and you can see him being, you can see him acting, like where he pulls himself together and that voice that, you know, is in his head just going, you can get through this. You just need to say these lines. You know, when he looks like he's about to break down into tears, because you can tell how much it means to him, and he gives this, he finishes the bit that's written down and he starts listing people who have helped him,
and which is always the most emotional bit for, I think, anyone
speaking. Bless him again. I'll link it below so you can watch it for yourself, because it's really lovely. There were, I will say, that wraps up the winners of the awards. I will say there were a number of times I teared up watching stuff, because in the second, this Broadway's Back show, they were trying to put as many performances on as possible. So you had the three nominated musicals, but you also had a lot of performances from people in the industry, including Kristin Chenoweth and Idina Menzel, the original Glinda and Elphaba in Wicked, getting together for the first time in a long time to sing the song For Good, which is already like a heavy emotional song. And Kristin Chenoweth nearly starts crying. And I'm like, no, Kristin, love, she... you can't, because I'll go. And then we'll all just be sobbing.
The first bit, she makes the first couple of lines, but then she looks at Idina and you can tell at that moment she goes, I might start crying. No, I'm going to keep going. No, I'm going to keep singing. Like, I'm going to keep it going. Because she's got to sing until Elphaba comes in, which is, I never realised how long she sings for. Apart from when I was like, come on, Kristin, you can do it.
Like, get through it. Don't cry. We have faith in you. So that was lovely. Again, I will link a lot of the performances below. You can get a taste of them yourself. Josh Groban was there, our favourite. Andrew Rannells and Titus Burgess did a performance of It Takes Two from Into the Woods. For diehard theatre fans, Brian Stokes Mitchell and Audra McDonald sang Wheels of a Dream from Ragtime, which is a song that they sang together at the Tony Awards when Ragtime was nominated originally years and years ago. So that was, they pitched the performances really well, because there was an element of like, you're a diehard theatre fan, you'll love this, but also, ooh, fun, new music, shiny, appealing to people who maybe aren't as invested or just there to watch the sort of the performances. We do also need to mention the In Memoriam section, which unsurprisingly was very emotional. It was 8 minutes long. It was two songs, a dance break and a few instrumentals, with four screens showing people's faces and names, and then at the end of it, like, literally an entire wall of text with further names listed. And I was expecting the In Memoriam bit to be hard hitting, because it always is. And there's always that recollection of, oh, I'd you know, you kind of forget the big names who have passed in the past year. But to do it at a time of COVID and have people like Adam Schlesinger, the, you know, the guy who wrote a lot of the music for Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, and Nick Cordero, who's a prolific Broadway actor, who all of the community had got together when he ended up being hospitalized with COVID. Like, having names like that featured alongside a lot of people who just died of old age, Ian Holm, Dan and Carol, and Hal Prince was there, which was a really weird one, because I'd forgotten how long it had been since Hal Prince is one of the most esteemed Broadway directors of all time. He's kind of responsible for the reason we have Andrew Lloyd Webber and Stephen Sondheim, as we do, he's an incredible, incredible director. He died in the summer of 2019. I remember writing a post about it for the Showtime Facebook page. And obviously that's the sort of thing that would have been represented had there been a Tony Awards in 2020, as there should have been. And instead it was the number of people who'd sort of been added into the people who had died this year.
Yeah.
That I think was really hard hitting. Kelly O'Hara and Norm Lewis sang Somewhere from West Side Story. And the second that started, I was like, well, I'm gone. I can't, no. You've played this really well, guys. I can't cope with this. Full on sobbing. Robbie Fairchild, who is an amazing dancer, possibly best known for playing Munkerstrap in the Cats film. Don't hold that against him. He did a little number. It was really effective and very well done, but yeah. definitely an emotional watch. But again, we'll link it here so you can give it a watch for yourself. I guess the summary point needs to be that even though it was a really weird Tony year in terms of how long it took, in terms of what was nominated, in terms of how it was actually presented on the night, more than anything, I'm just relieved that it happened. That we are lucky to be in an industry that, even though it has been pretty much decimated by the pandemic, has come back more vibrant than ever. And that actually didn't really go away. That, you know, people were still working, people were still putting stuff out there. And I think we're really lucky to have a way of celebrating that. And musical theatre goes so well with joy and celebration and that kind of emotional uplifting. And I absolutely think that certainly the second part of the Tonys, the Broadway's Back show, nailed that. And it was kind of the perfect celebration, even if a bit weird.
Yeah. And congratulations to Les Urgent Jr. as well for presenting that bit. I like him presenting it, because I think it's nice to have someone who has been on Broadway and knows the industry really well, presenting it, and him and Josh Groban do a number, and it's lovely. Just wanted to shout him out.
Because they had Audra McDonald hosting the first half of the show.
To follow Audra at any point. Like,
it's weird because none of us have really seen Audra hosting that evening, because that was the bit that was on Paramount Plus, a subscription service. But also, like, she was nominated because it's Audra McDonald. I don't think there's ever an acting category nominated where she's not nominated. She's a legend.
Even if she hasn't been in anything, they're just like, and then also Audra, like, in brackets at the end.
Someone had jokingly said, if Aaron Tveit doesn't win the Tony for best actor, just give it to Audra. Like, she might as well have it. She's like the most successful individual Tony Award winner ever. So yeah, she was hosting, and I'm sure she did an amazing job. Like, I love her so much. She's also she's great because she's so funny and kind and genuine, but also she's at that point where she feels like she could be your best friend but also your mother, and I just want to do her proud. Never met her, never will.
No.
I'm like,
and she's so beloved, I'm doing this for you. By like not only like mainstream musical, like not just like musical theatre audiences, but like, but I think everybody loves Audra McDonald. So yeah, she's a, you feel like you're in safe hands with her.
Yes. And it's nice to have two, as you say, two such established Broadway names hosting, because again, it kind of just feeds into that discourse around theatre. And I loved it. I'm really pleased that it was back. It was weird. But it's just sort of nice. And I will say, I think you and I, Abby, are in a better position because we both really like Moulin Rouge. If you're not a fan of Moulin Rouge, it's not the Tonys for you. I'm sorry.
No, there's always next year.
Yes, and it will be interesting. We're beginning to get a bit of information about the shows that are going to be opening, either that are coming back from having closed due to the pandemic or that will be starting. So things like Six and Mrs. Doubtfire, the gender swapped version of Company. We're getting all of the names that we could be looking out for at next year, or whenever the next Tony Awards are. Andrew Lloyd Webber's hoping to take Cinderella to Broadway. Sing Street should be coming back. think that the next awards series is going to be really, really exciting and much more varied. Yeah. And it will be interesting to see the sort of shows that win then, or that don't win, knowing that they would have been nominated at this year, well, at the 2020 Tony Awards, had they stayed open. Because I guarantee there will be things that miss out on awards that we think should have won just because they're up against more competition next year.
Yeah. And we'll see some original score nominations for musicals.
It's really odd not having an original score category because only plays were nominated. We have three jukebox musicals. None of them were eligible. It was weird.
The next round of awards, there will be a lot of like opinions about what should have won, who should have won. They would have run Best Revival here. And I think that's going to be interesting to see see what everybody thinks.
2 years of theatre news and discussion and politics are going to go into one season. And you're like, oh my goodness, it's going to be so... Whenever we do the next Tony special, it's going to be like 3 hours long.
Yes, please brace yourself for everything that is about to follow. Because we'll obviously keep updating everyone about what we know as the news comes out. Mm. And people, like, shows are opened and all that sort of stuff. So it's very exciting, but also... it's going to be very difficult to predict, I think.
Absolutely. And even when there's not Tony Award stuff going on, if you want to stay up to date on the latest musical theatre news, hear a load of, you know, great musical theatre show tunes and interact with, you know, yours truly and PR Abby, then you can listen to Showtime live on URN at 1350.net every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. and follow us on Facebook at URN Showtime or on Twitter at Showtime URN, where you can also find our weekly Spotlight On podcast, which does like a deep dive into individual shows if you're interested in that. I guess that covers most of it. I mean, we could go on talking for hours about this, but I think we should probably end it there. We've covered all the main points, and if you want to find out anything more about any of the winners or nominees, follow the links here in the post. Other than that, thank you so much for listening. I hope this has been of interest, and hope to see you soon with more musical theatre news. I'm Ella Vadrinska. Goodbye.
You're listening to Showtime
on URN.